CJAM 99.1 FM, your only true sound alternative in Windsor, Detroit. CJAM broadcasts from the University of Windsor locally at 99.1 FM and to the world at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome, welcome. You are listening to Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM. I'm Graham Hutchings.
I'm Brandon Fragamenti.
Thank you for joining us. Windsor Law here in Windsor has a focus on social justice, and pro bono fits in right with that to match law student volunteers with organizations to deliver legal services, which are of great need but lack sufficient resources to retain legal counsel. Got to let you know, all pro bono projects operate under the supervision of a lawyer, so you know they're legit. And pro bono not only provides law students with volunteer opportunities to develop legal skills, but also has a positive impact on the legal profession. So there you go.
They sure do.
And just before we get into discussing any legal topics, we just want to come right out and let you know that anything said on this show is exclusively our opinions as non-lawyers, and also does not reflect CJAM as a radio station or an entity.
We have a really exciting conversation coming up a little later in the show with Naja and Ellen. That's going to be talking about the Essex County Youth Diversion Program. We're going to be understanding the forthcoming cannabis laws in Canada. So that's going to be exciting. So that tells you what we're going to be talking about today.
Cannabis. Everybody's talking about it.
Everyone.
You smell it on your way to work.
On your way home from work.
In your dreams.
In your dreams. So as most of you, if not all of you, know, the Cannabis Act was enacted very recently.
Slow down. What?
It's true. You must not have. Were you studying what you didn't know?
Yeah, I've been.
I thought you'd be stoked about it.
I've been deep in the books. Well, to be honest, it's coming at a fairly inopportune time for me myself, just because I'm looking to retain all mental sharpness and acuity as I enter exams, so I have not.
Hey, the research is still kind of inconclusive.
This is true.
You never know.
I'm operating off of 12 years of anecdotal.
Anecdotal.
Research, qualitative.
You know, that doesn't hold up in academia.
Not quantitative.
So the Cannabis Act itself, there's a lot to it. Could you recite, please, every single piece in that legislation?
Section 1, it's legal now.
The end. That's it.
That's, yeah.
No, actually, it's very interesting. So a few of the things that it does, it restricts youth access to cannabis, as we're going to be talking about later. That's a big part of what it's trying to do. It prohibits promotions that are designed to encourage youth to use cannabis. That's part of that. And imposes serious criminal penalties on people who break the law, especially those who import or export cannabis illegally.
Got to keep it local.
Yep, and of course, provide cannabis to youth. There's some new legislation on that. What it's also trying to do is reduce the burden on the criminal justice system, as we'll get to a little bit later, especially when it comes to simple possession or things of that nature. And it provides for the legal production of cannabis. It allows adults to possess and access regulated quality control legal cannabis. And it enhances the public awareness of the health risks associated with cannabis. So it kind of goes back to what we were talking about the research that's out there.
there's a lot of research that doesn't know a lot, to be honest. You know, I think this it's going to be a great opportunity now that it actually is legal to fully investigate the effects, both positive and negative, come what may, in terms of cannabis consumption, both recreational and habitual. It's been a big roadblock for cannabis research, the fact that the topic they were attempting to research was, in fact, illegal, you know?
Yeah, I think it's going to really open the doors, like you said, for medical uses, and maybe open the conversation to medical uses for other drugs as well.
For sure. I saw a great study a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, about giving MDMA to an octopus.
Yeah, see, and that wouldn't have been able to happen prior to the Cannabis Act.
Yeah, here's a quick preview. It got more touchy.
It got okay. Well, that's the beginning of the end and the end of that research.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but so real educational things. I just wanted to, because it's like we were talking about. It's a little dry. The legislation, the nature of it, of acts, are a little dry. We need to love them now that we're in law school.
Absolutely.
But they can be. So I just wanted to kind of go through some of the provisions because people might want to know, and we might be their premier way to find out the source.
Let's do it.
Source.
For all of our listeners in the Windsor-Detroit area, you know, who choose not to...
Maybe not Detroit, because
access the news.
I don't know what Michigan's...
Well, actually, Michigan just passed their own cannabis legalization in a referendum in the last midterm election.
Oh,
so
okay.
They will, I mean, they're still in a Republican lame duck session, but they will be bringing forward some form of legalization. Of course, that doesn't mean that you can bring cannabis across the border, even though it might be legal in both places, because the border is administered by Homeland Security, which is a federal agency, and they mean business.
So stay tuned, Detroit residents, because things might be changing.
They just might.
So what is legal? A lot of people want to know what's legal now.
Absolutely.
Because
yours truly wants to know.
Some people are like, it's a free-for-all now. And it mostly is, but not completely, so I'll tell you. So you can purchase limited amounts of fresh cannabis, dried cannabis, cannabis oil, cannabis seeds, or cannabis plants from retailers authorized by the provinces and territories.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's great. That all sounds delightful. I'm interested about the fresh cannabis thing. I'm not really familiar with that as a format or a method.
I don't know. It'll be like in a grocery store where it's got like little spritzers of water on the vegetables.
Absolutely.
And then you can just pick it.
Yeah.
I think that's what I think that's what they mean.
Just little bushels, and
yeah.
it's going to be worse at No Frills than it is at Loblaws.
Hey, don't knock No Frills.
Certainly not.
You can possess up to 30 grams of dried legal cannabis or equivalent in non-dried form in public. It's the big one, in public.
In just flagrantly, blatantly walking around in public with this stuff.
Now, this I don't know if this is interesting to you, Graham, but I've known you for a few months now, and I feel like it might be. You can grow up to 4 cannabis plants per household.
Whoa,
not
whoa,
per person,
whoa.
For personal use, from licensed seeds or seedlings from a licensed supplier.
See, that's really interesting, not just for me. I mean, currently I pay my own hydro bill, so I'm a little little less amenable to that information than I might have been in the past or will be in the future. But that is currently, I mean, obviously we got a lot of growing pains to go with this whole legalization thing. It's a massive paradigm shift. But that's one of the provisions that's really got a lot of people up in arms, simply because there is a drastic shortage of licensed seeds from licensed suppliers.
Oh, yeah.
That's not to say that there isn't a shortage. Or there is a shortage of cannabis seeds. They're pretty, they're all over. However, in order to be a law-abiding citizen and purchase licensed seeds from a licensed supplier, basically everybody is sold out, and they don't know when they're getting more.
See, I thought you'd think that they would have – maybe they did, and they just kind of – they didn't project properly. But you'd think that they would have thought about the demand that was coming and maybe not pass this so quickly?
I think, I think there can be no overestimation for Canadians' consumption of cannabis, generally speaking. All research points to us being the highest consumers in the developed world. This is prior to legalization. We'll see how much higher we get. So bad. But, there were a lot of articles and stuff, a lot of news coming out in the months prior to legalization saying Canada does not have enough to supply the demand. Mm-hmm. And, the province of Newfoundland ran out basically in 2 days.
Yeah.
Just like that. And I don't think they were alone in that. I think it's
that's an island. Yeah. Yeah. Another thing, so... which we'll get to with more conversation about the youth, but you can share up to 30 grams of dried cannabis or equivalent with other adults. So it's something you can do. But there's so in that, this is, as you can tell by what is legal, it is kind of, can be a free for all. You can have a lot of fun. You can have different types of cannabis products at home, like food, drinks. It says provided that there's no dangerous organic solvents used in making them. But the thing is that so when you look at there's the other side of the Cannabis Act, which is more educational and preventative for youth. Now, the Cannabis Act creates two new criminal offenses with maximum penalties of 14 years in jail.
Wowza.
Yeah, maximum penalty. We'll keep that in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But giving or selling cannabis to youth or using a youth to commit a cannabis-related offense. But the giving or selling cannabis to youth is interesting to me, not because of the selling, because it makes sense, but the giving seems interesting,
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What's going to be the sentencing structures or parameters for giving, like, a joint?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to know kind of how much volume or amount plays a role in that. It's also interesting, just there aren't a lot of penalty or there aren't a lot of crimes related to gifting or giving. It's a fairly benign act, or can be certainly not in this case. But I'm also curious about the. Using a youth to commit a cannabis-related offense. Now, do you think that mostly relates to trafficking?
That's where my mind went at first, was trafficking, mm-hmm. because you'd have to think that was really bad anyways before that.
Yeah, my mind goes to the corner boys from seasons 1 and 4 of The Wire. I don't know if you ever saw.
It's still on my list.
Keep it on the list. Move it to the top.
Okay.
It's a cliche, but
you get that reference.
Some cliches are cliches for a reason. Everybody go watch The Wire. What else does the Cannabis Act do?
We've covered a lot, but what it for impaired driving, kind of an obvious one. Driving while impaired by cannabis is illegal, of course. And you say of course. Some people really try to draw a distinction between being under the influence of alcohol and marijuana, but for the purposes of this legislation, and in my opinion, I think it's they kind of hit the nail on the head for that.
Absolutely, impaired is impaired. I'm sure there's much nuance to be discussed between the differences of impairment, but regardless, you are not of sober mind, and should be justifiably punished or not punished, but punished for that. Interestingly, so far they have not seen a rise in cannabis-related driving infractions.
Because that was one of the, I guess, counterpoints, right, to this legislation would have been the spinoff into other types of crime, including that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's still concerns about detection in terms of drivers under the influence of cannabis.
Yep.
Interestingly, Windsor, give yourself a pat on the back. Last Friday, there was a ride program. They stopped 400 vehicles, and they were 400 for 400. Not an impaired driver among them.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Do you want to know the history of weed illegalization.
I'd love to know.
And now legalization.
Yeah, absolutely.
When do you think it was deemed illegal in Canada?
Oh, I don't know.
Throw out a number. Throw out a year.
I'm going to say the year of Confederation, 1867.
No. No, much. Well, yeah, much later, I would say. Much later. 1923.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, it was deemed illegal in Canada in 1923.
The roaring 20s.
The roaring 20s. Weren't that wasn't the type of roaring they were going for. Narcotics Drug Act Amendment. Amendment Bill introduced the act. So to prohibit the improper use of opium and other drugs, and they added cannabis in addition to opium, cocaine.
Such an unfair conflation.
I know. Years, 15 years later, though, the first marijuana seizure was made by Canadian law enforcement.
Busted.
So you'd think, you know, on its face, that that would deter, you know, deter people from using. But
sure.
It seems to not have.
Absolutely.
So we have, this is all from Leafly, by the way. That's where I'm getting a lot of this information for the history, which is the world's largest cannabis information resource.
Empowering people in legal cannabis markets, to learn about the right products for their lifestyle and wellness needs.
So obviously not an ad at all. We just wanted to make sure everybody knew where we were getting the information.
Yeah, you know.
And previously where I got the information about the Cannabis Act from the government. So you know it's probably right.
.gov.
So let's jump to the 1960s.
I'd love to.
What do you think happened then?
Ooh, I don't know. I think probably in the 1960s, given what I know, there was a healthy amount of cannabis being consumed.
There was a lot of hippie action going on.
Mm. Where the hippie lobby.
Big Hippie was really gaining steam in the 60s. I found there's an interesting statistic here. You know me and my statistics. I love them.
This guy loves stats.
Yeah. Well, I was never good at the class, but I love reading them. So there was 25 convictions between 1930 and 1946. There was 20 in 1962 alone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's jump to 1968. The number of cannabis convictions jumped up to, what do you think, from years earlier and with 20 cases?
20, I'm going to say we get to 200.
No, colder. I guess you would be warmer, but not warm at all. Cold.
Bigger?
Yeah.
800.
No, you're not going to guess it. It's 2,300.
My gosh.
You know, there's a lot of things that could go into that where they started to realize it was maybe an issue and they started to police it more. But
sure.
You know, I thought it was like quite the jump. The 60s really took hold.
Yeah, to increased by a lot of percent. Jeez.
So what's interesting here, to get a little bit more serious, so in 1996, Terrence Parker is arrested for cannabis possession,
mm-hmm.
cultivation, and trafficking. And he was caught growing cannabis to control his epileptic seizures. He appealed to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom. In 2000, the Ontario Court of Appeal ruled that the prohibition of cannabis use infringed on Terrence Parker's right to life, liberty, and security of the person, therefore rendering cannabis prohibition unconstitutional. So that, I'd imagine, was the kind of the impetus for this move now that we've gotten to, you know, years later.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's not the highest court in the land, but certainly the Ontario Court of Appeal, is a large voice in our interpretation of the law, and, you know, rendering the prohibition unconstitutional, I think did certainly help get the ball rolling. It's interesting that the Liberal government's kind of main line was, it's happening, it's gonna happen, let's tax it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's absolutely, you know, an extremely valid argument to be made about preventing organized crime and that sort of thing, but it does feel like it was just kind of an eventuality, a rolling over, if you will, and here we are.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the conversation about it, about marijuana, changed. It went kind of to be in 1923, I think there was very little that I could find of the reason why it was included in that act, and then blowing up in the 60s and now, where it's just kind of, you can see the tide, the social tide changing, and it's really interesting.
There is a great, fun, old Reefer Madness. That I would recommend. Just outrageous kind of anti-marijuana propaganda put out. It's like almost a public service announcement.
But it's almost like a cult, kind of piece of... I think we'll switch gears, though. I want to talk about something a bit more serious because it wouldn't be a real conversation about drugs in Canada and crime and everything without talking about race.
Absolutely.
So there was a study I found. You know, again, I love my stats. So in 2014, there are 2,177 inmates in federal prison for drug-related reasons, Schedule II. Close to 270 of those were black. Same number were indigenous. While the vast amount was Caucasian, it still represents a significant overrepresentation of black and aboriginal people relative to their share of general population. This is a bit of an older article from the Toronto Star, but I just wanted to show this stat. And from the stuff that I've read and things I've seen, it doesn't seem like much of this has changed. But the Toronto Star conducted their own analysis on the difference between how blacks and whites were treated by police regarding basic drug charges. They found a wide disparity. They found that black people were charged with simple drug possession were taken to police stations more often than whites facing the same charge. And that was using data. There was over 480,000 incidents, so they looked at
all
the stuff.
Wow, that's huge. Well, yeah, I mean, there was really a wild amount of discrepancy afforded to any individual police officer in terms of their level of enforcement of simple possession, as there still will be, especially amongst youth, currently under our new laws. It's a $200 ticket for anyone under 19 in Ontario with simple possession. But I would imagine that, much like alcohol laws have passed, is very much up to the discretion of the officer. And that's a much larger conversation to be had about policing in Canada.
Yeah, I found, with that, the Vern White, who is the former Ottawa police chief, he said that he doesn't buy that the argument that race has an impact on arrest rates. He said it usually comes with another charge, like trafficking, like something bigger. He said the reason was simple, is paperwork. And that's so few first-year students and, anybody who kind of knows this stuff, the Malmo Levine case.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the main things that they talked about, was that, there was the maximum penalty, because he was talking about the gross disproportionality of possessing marijuana. And they're like, the court had said it carries no minimum sentence. We're not going to, for small amounts, we're not going to give you the maximum. And I thought that was interesting. And I thought the idea of gross disproportionality within that, where they were talking about what harm does it do to the rest of society if I have a small amount of marijuana?
Yeah.
And back then, in that case, they said it doesn't matter about the harm to everybody else. This is a distinct case, And so, but it's changed now. So, like, societally.
Yeah. It makes you think about the Mills harm principle, and like, what is the... what is the societal justification to prevent me from doing something exclusively to me,
Yeah, I wonder what it means to a bigger question about that,
For sure.
Yeah.
Autonomy and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to cut to a quick commercial break, and when we get back, we're going to have two representatives who are working on a project with the Essex County Youth Diversion Program, helping both youth and their parents understand the forthcoming laws in Canada. So please.
How much did your band make at your last show? What if I told you that you could make an additional $75 per gig? SoCan members who perform registered original material may be eligible for payment. What is SoCan, you ask? SoCan is the Society of Composers, Authors, and Music Publishers of Canada, the Canadian copyright collective that administers the performing rights of more than 90,000 members. For details on how to get paid for your music and for free registration, adjust your web browser to socan.ca.
Use.
At the end of each month, we tally up the plays and make a chart of top local tunes. Join the CJAM FM Singles Club today and get your music on the radio. Submit your fresh new tracks to cjammd@gmail.com with the subject line, Singles Club. You could find yourself at the top of CJAM's monthly local chart. The CJAM Singles Club, just another way we reach higher ground in Windsor and Detroit. More information at cjam.ca.
All right, so welcome. I think if we could start just having both of you introduce yourselves, maybe tell us a little bit about your background and why you chose to get involved in pro bono this year.
Hi, my name is Nadja. I'm a 1L at Windsor Law. I got interested in working with pro bono specifically because I used to work at the federal government, and I used to work under public safety, so we used to work on like looking into pardons and cannabis. So that's where my interest came in, and when I heard about this cannabis project, I was very, very interested, and I thought, you know, I can bring in a little bit of my experience from there to help with this project.
So you're the right person to have on the on the show about
hopefully.
Cannabis, the new Cannabis Act.
Yes,
perfect.
Hopefully.
And my name's Ellen. I'm in second year in the dual program. I have a background in psychology, and I worked primarily with youth. So I'm the youth component of this project.
Perfect.
And yeah, I worked with a lot of kids. So I think that's why they chose me to work on this project. And cannabis is a very hot topic right now, which is why I wanted to get involved in it. And I did pro bono last year, and I loved it. So.
Oh, people are talking about it. That's for sure.
In light of that, you're talking about youth. If there is one piece of advice you could give to your teenage self, what would it be? Could be about, you know,
about
cannabis, but if it's, it could, you know.
Certainly doesn't have to be.
In general?
Yeah. Now being in second year of dual, I'm sure you've learned a lot since then.
Yeah, I mean, don't try so hard. I think just hang, you know, hang out with your friends a little bit more and
just
don't take school so seriously.
A bit, yep.
Yeah, just because it gets harder and harder. Yeah. So might as well start as later on as you can.
Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
Take it more easy. Don't stress out too much. I think, especially as a kid, I used to stress out a lot about the little things. And then as you grow up, you realize there's more important things in life. So just take it easy.
I think I'd agree with that. I think I probably tried a little too hard in school. I remember, you know, thinking like, yeah, if these guys don't ace grade 9, there's no way they're going to be able to pivot, you know,
what am I
get into
do?
School. But they could. You can. You. It's never too late to pivot. I got one more question, a fun one for you. If you were to be an indica, a sativa, or a hybrid, which one would you be and why? I can clarify that question if it needs clarification.
I have no idea.
So generally speaking, and this is from what I've read, you know, extensive reading on
science
the topic,
mostly.
mostly scientific journals. Indicas generally, as a strain, are more mellow. They give you more of a body high, really chill you out. A sativa has been described as more of a head high. It's fairly high energy. Also, what can give you anxiety, though, depending on who you are.
Don't need any more of that.
And certainly not. And a hybrid is a blend of the two. Generally speaking, most cannabis available now is a blend. I guess I'm saying, are you guys more mellow? Or are you more upbeat?
I'd want more mellow because I'm more stressed out and anxiety. So yeah, I'd take the mellow.
Oh yeah, same for me.
Yeah, I think generally across law students,
we need to chill.
The move would be mellow. Okay. Yeah. For sure. All right. So this project that you're working on, the Essex County Youth Diversion Program, Understanding the Forthcoming Cannabis Laws in Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So pretty much what we are tasked with doing, we're creating pretty much two types of informational brochures. So one geared specifically towards youth. So that's coming into more of an education background. So trying to tell them, you know, what the punishments are, what is allowed, what is not allowed, just to kind of educate them, because there seems to be a lot of miscommunication directed at youth on what is actually legal. And then kind of the second type of brochure is more about geared towards parents, and trying to kind of as well teach them, but then maybe as well with the child's brochure, not to have a lot of legal jargon, but we can a little bit have more information towards the parents. So that's what we're tasked with, two types of brochures to kind of give more information about what the legislation is about.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because we were chatting before, because a lot of course, the Cannabis Act is there to legalize the use of marijuana for people over 18.
Yeah.
But one of the main things that they've done in their, like, communication and within the legislation itself is really try to almost take, like, a preventative approach for youth, rather than, you know, kind of saying, oh, you will use this later, here's what you need to know. It's kind of like, don't use this really ever. That's kind of like the tone it seems to take. Mm-hmm. What's the approach that you guys are taking in the language that you're going to be using in yours to, both in both areas?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a really good question, because Joanna, who's our the executive director of Essex County Youth Diversion Program, she was saying explicitly that she wants something to be informational. And I think that comes from the fact that we're dealing with youth who are rebellious, and they don't want to be told exactly what to do. And so when we're putting this information out there, we don't want it to seem like this is what happens if you do this and it's a bad, bad thing. It's more of, okay, this is just what the law says, and just present it in the most neutral way as possible.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, the legislation is embedded with this language of trying to deter youth from using cannabis, which makes sense, because it's illegal for youth to use it. It's not, you can use it when you're older, but not as youth, mm-hmm. which is one of the misconceptions that youth have, because apparently a lot of kids are saying, oh, it's legal, so now we can use it.
Like, and everybody, yeah.
They think it's a free-for-all, a lot of them. So our job is to kind of say, no, just wait a little bit. You can just wait a couple years.
Yeah, you'll get there.
You'll get there.
if you want to.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, and especially now that it is legal, it's certainly harder to, you know, preach any sort of message of total,
prevention,
total abstention or prevention. It's certainly coming if you wanted to. You mentioned earlier, you talked about some of the common misconceptions about the legislation. I was wondering if you could expand on that. We are now a little disconnected from the youth, not really sure what they're up to. What are they thinking, or what are they thinking incorrectly about the state of the law?
Yeah, so just speaking to when we met with Joanna, she told us, you know, a lot of youth came up to her after they heard about legalization. So they said, you know, does that mean we can use coke now? That's literally how big the misconception is. They don't understand, like, what is actually legal. So that's where we're kind of coming in and trying to be like, no, this is what is legal. And even, like, trying to think that they can take it over to the border. That's also another big misconception, that they can just take it with them. So it's a lot of kind of just trying to make them make sure that they understand what is legal and what's not.
You know, for the most, like, wired up generation ever on the internet, you'd think they would figure it out with a quick Google search.
Have you read the legislation, though? It's not like, I was going to sound really old, be like, it's like an Instagram post or a tweet, because I don't want to reduce teenagers to that, but it doesn't read, you know, like, really, it's not an entertaining piece of
No, it's writing. Not. But the good thing about it, sorry to cut you off,
no.
I think the good thing about it is that there's, if you just do kind of a random Google search about cannabis law in Ontario, let's say, they have a ton of websites, almost too much,
to the
point where they have consistent information, but it's a lot. So I think if there are kids that wanted to look into it further, the websites are very well written out.
Yeah.
What kind of websites have you, are they news articles, or are they government websites that you found? Or
government, specifically the Ontario government has like just a one website where they provide all information about everything, and then they have specifically a youth section where there's additional information if they click. However, for youth, we don't know if, you know, they'll actually go through that. It seems like it's a little bit more harder for them to kind of click and go somewhere, but it is available. But the question is, will they actually look up for it?
Are teens spending their time navigating government websites?
Exactly, yeah.
Being socially responsible.
hard to know.
I was actually curious because you're saying that, and it made me think. Have you seen? There's like a commercial where it's like a guy talking about, like an older gentleman talking about like the preventative nature of the legislation to youth. Have you seen that commercial?
Is it the one where they're in a mall or something?
Yeah, they're and then they interview people and then they go to him.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that and then kind of thinking about. Looking to youth and like trying to communicate. Do you think that's an effective way to communicate that kind of commercial?
Where are these commercials, shown?
Yeah.
Really? Because I haven't seen any cannabis ads anywhere. And maybe it's because I don't watch TV or, I don't see it. And I wonder if these kids are seeing it too, but they say it's going to be embedded into the school curriculum, if it hasn't already. So maybe that's an avenue. But will it be helpful? Will it be impactful? I have no idea.
Yeah, there are some extremely dry bus shelter ads in Windsor that are basically like under 19, because they don't want to actually like even depict.
Oh yeah.
Cannabis. Which is strange when you consider all the like anti-drinking advertisements that were always, these like very exaggerated party scenes and like very over the top, and then something disastrous happens and then boom, they hit you with the message. So maybe it's just because it's so new, we haven't got our
or
best.
What they'd show, it's like just people on a couch.
They're definitely treading carefully right now. Yeah,
partying can go bad.
So when you're designing two brochures, one to adults and one to the youth specifically, what are some important considerations you're thinking of when you're communicating these changes in the law to youth?
Yeah, just making sure that we don't use a lot of legal jargon. I think that's really important, so that they can really understand and read it and not make it too long. Like, in terms of our brochure, we're not talking about just a one piece of paper kind of brochure, possibly a booklet kind of thing. And that's what Joanna expressed to us. She wanted more of a booklet kind of format. And as well, just making it easy to read, clear.
Interactive.
Interactive. She said maybe even like at the end having a quiz or something about what everything that they read through, and just making sure that it's just geared towards their language, so it relates to kind of talking about what happens if they do it in school, in their social circle, just little things like that that they could relate to make it more like understandable.
And even like driving and this making it really relatable to their personal lives and not saying, oh, this is the fluffy language of the law, and them getting the impression that it won't affect them, because it definitely does. And I think making it interactive will get their attention, hopefully. And I think Joanna is going to try to make it really enticing to the youth, and our job is to really make the language clear for them.
Where will the, brochures or booklets be given out?
At the Essex County.
Oh, of course. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if there's going to be, given to schools or anything else.
Yeah, and possibly, like she said, we might be looking into online as well, but we're not sure for that. But right now it's mostly hard copy, but we'll see.
It's funny, when you said language of the youth, I pictured just like,
Hashtag.
Exactly.
I don't think they do still use that.
Absolutely not. No, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Swag's probably old now.
Yeah, just memes.
It's old now that we brought it up.
It's all memes.
We should do a meme,
By the time you, like, print a meme on paper, I think actually, like, if you print out a meme, it kills the meme.
It definitely can't exist
anymore. You're just like, oh,
we just
God.
Look like tacky adults trying to be cool.
Here's like, legislation.
That's Steve Buscemi meme. Hey, fellow kids. Okay, let's talk about the law for a second. How have the laws around cannabis and youth changed since legalization?
I guess quite a bit. I mean, the Smoke-Free Ontario Act has been affected. The Criminal Code, I think, has been affected. Something that's really interesting that I found yesterday was the Education Act has been affected. So in terms of suspensions and expulsions, things like that. So
Yeah, I didn't see that. Mended a lot of acts.
It did.
By being enacted.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how it's changed suspensions and expulsions?
So I think the policies are now that if you're caught either under the influence or having cannabis, then you are considered for suspension.
Yes.
And if you are caught giving it to a minor, then pending investigation, you could be expelled. So, and there's a lot of mitigating factors as well, but generally suspension and expulsion are definitely part of getting schools to you know, dissuade youth from using it, because it's illegal, first of all, so it makes sense.
And what is the Smoke Free Ontario Act?
It's just don't smoke. That's what I would say.
It's a very dry
about zones for smoking.
It's a very dry piece of legislation.
It's very dry.
Well, it's interesting that with the switch in government in Ontario, we went from having what would have been probably the most restrictive cannabis laws in the country to some of the least restrictive. In terms of Kathleen Wynne's Liberal government, originally intended for people just to be able to smoke within their own home, and then old Doug Ford came in, and now you can smoke cannabis basically anywhere you can smoke cigarettes, which is, you know, we've done like a big paradigm shift. So it's I think it is going to be fairly difficult to dissuade youth from doing it if it becomes that, you know, quite so just like prevalent in you know, just absolutely everywhere. However, I will say I did read a Toronto Star article that was like, you know, we're going to, now that it's legal in parks in the summer are going to reek like pot. And I'm like, have you been to a park in the summer? Come on.
What I was curious about was, because you said you were, you worked for the federal government.
Yes.
Were you working at all, like, when the act was being developed? Like, were you a part of that at all?
Yes, but I was just a small junior analyst, so...
Hey,
don't undersell yourself.
Yeah.
Come on.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so, like, one of... I wasn't, like, really... I looked into more of doing research in terms of pardons and stuff and trying to see, like, the possibility of that. But, yeah, I was just working on the side, but I got to see, like, a lot of what was happening and, you know...
Mm-hmm. What do you know about the pardons? Because I know that they said they were going to happen, and they've kind of moved slowly.
Yeah, I just know it's being looked into. So yeah, that's all I can.
They haven't
really
said a whole lot.
Yeah,
about it, have they?
It's more of a we'll see what will happen kind of thing. So.
Yeah, pretty classic government. You know, they'll just drop the headline and then you know,
see what happens.
See what happens.
Exactly.
In your opinions, is there any? In what you've seen about the law, is there anything that you wish that could have been written better, done better, or put in or taken out? How would you have altered the Cannabis Act at all, if you could?
So this is something we've actually been looking into and talking to our supervising lawyer about. So we're not 100% sure on whether there is a discrepancy, but what we found right now, which is really interesting, is you can't have any cannabis in a car or a boat. It has to be, you know, packaged and sealed in a certain way. You can't have access to it, basically. But then there's another piece of legislation that says you can bring it in between provinces as long as it's a certain amount. So then you kind of get into this question of how do you transport it if you can't even have it in your vehicle. And so right now we're kind of looking into that.
Can you take it on a plane? Like
not internationally.
Yeah. Oh, interprovincially?
Domestically?
Yeah.
So far...
See, that's a question.
Yeah, that is a question.
Yeah. So far, it's only... We see it in terms of, like, I think defined in terms of the motor vehicle, but that could be something we could look into.
It's got to be on a bike.
Yeah.
Or a skateboard.
just walk across the border.
Another thing I found was interesting that so with the whole youth conversation, selling or giving cannabis to youth is now maximum penalty of 14 years. And I found in an article that I think it was like a might have been a Toronto Star article, but they compared, it was a sentence in line with facilitating a terrorist activity, threatening to commit a nuclear offense, bribing a judge, child luring, recklessly discharging a firearm, et cetera, et cetera. I was wondering your opinion, because, you know, this could include an 18-year-old passing a joint to a 17-year-old, you know, like at that, that small of an example. How do you guys feel about that?
That would suck, first of all.
Or am I wrong in that assessment, from what you guys know?
No, I think that's fair. I think the one thing to know is that the 14 years is it's a maximum penalty.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think it comes down to, like, sentencing, you know, and I feel there may be a difference in terms of, like, maybe a 25-year-old giving it to a 16-year-old compared to, like, an 18-year-old. I think maybe it comes down to when it's actually the judge's sentencing, that might be something that they may take into consideration. So, yes, it is harsh, but I think we have to kind of remember that it is a maximum, and just from what we're seeing in terms of the Ontario legislation, we're seeing that they're being kind of, it's more of educational penalties, right? So it's geared to more like, and I think that's a lot of a misconception where it's being really, really harsh against youth, but what we're finding in Ontario is actually, it's more of educational, right? Is that what you would say?
Yeah, for youth that are caught. I mean, the adults, it's a little bit harder because... Yeah. I think the legislation is really trying to say, don't give it to youth, and it's part of their purpose in making this legislation. Yeah. But I think for the youth, if they are caught, for example, then the penalties aren't life-altering.
Exactly.
There's a lot of flexibility in terms of sentencing. The most drastic one that we would say comes from driving. So, and it really depends on how many times you're caught under the influence. So it can range from a really small fine, well, not small, it's still in the hundreds range, and you get your license suspended, all the way up to, you know, the fines double, triple, and then now you have to attend mandatory programs. And it doesn't matter how old you are for mm-hmm. those ones.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get a lot of public opposition to that.
No, because it's about public safety, right?
Absolutely.
And that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
And I mean, it makes sense. You think about, say, you know, for the kid's shoulder tapping outside of an LCBO, he's probably going to get a drive home and a slap on the wrist, and the adult who purchased, you know, I don't know, whatever Smirnoff he was intending on purchasing should probably face some more harsher consequences. You also do kind of have to wonder about, you know, how much of these penalties are kind of just the government's way of, you know, safeguarding themselves just relative to enforcement. You know, we do hear a lot about these analogies of an 18-year-old passing a joint to a 17-year-old, and I'm like, well, is the cop just going to jump out of the bushes, and just...
Okay, so it's a party where it's a bunch of cops, a bunch of 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds smoking.
The old cop teen party.
Yeah.
It's classic.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder almost... Is it the same for alcohol?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. But yeah, you do bring up an interesting point with it being all down to sentencing, because, you know, if it becomes where it's like, yeah, okay, that's a year or something, like, because there's no minimum, I don't think, on that.
What we know either.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then again, we're still in the preliminary.
Still learning. Still researching.
We'll bring it back on.
We'll talk in April.
Tell us
what you've learned.
See how it goes.
So currently in Ontario, we have no storefront places to purchase cannabis, strictly online, which truly, unfortunately, happened to coincide with a Canada Post rotating strike. but that's, you know.
Coincidence?
Yeah, I don't know. But
conspiracy hour.
I'm not sure if you can speak to this, but in terms of ordering cannabis online, are you aware of any safeguards to prevent youth from ordering?
So, this was interesting. In Ontario, it doesn't seem like there's anything. So I tried going on. I think we both tried going onto the website, and you can just put in your, you know, age. You can make it up. There's no way of verifying it, and mm-hmm. they explicitly tell you once you click in your age, we won't keep that information. So that there is no safeguard yet. But there are two provinces. I think it's Newfoundland and Alberta, but I'm not too sure. they have kind of a two-step verification process. So, you know, you can, let's say, go to a liquor store and get your ID checked and get a special access code, and you put in that access code onto a website, and then you can purchase it online, and when they deliver it to you, you have to check your ID again to make sure that it's matching. So that's an interesting concept. Now, in practice, how will that play out? You can still kind of see how people can go about kind of, you know, hoops and loops and things like that. But it's they're definitely working on something.
That's probably where the education aspect for the parents would be, like, how to tell them that they can do this. This is it's not a foolproof method online, and to kind of watch out. And I'd imagine, back to the sentencing thing, if those facts were to be into a case, they might take that into account, that you know, you allowed.
Yeah.
It's a fairly glaring omission in the current Ontario structure. I mean, you know, like, you could just, any old credit card will do. Like, my parents are going to be gone this week. Let's all order it to my house. Sorry, I shouldn't be giving any of our youth listeners any ideas. I just mean it's a hole in the law. Yeah. And also, you know, how strict are, you know, Canada Post workers going to be on IDing you?
I think I did see, though, that in Ontario, when it's being mailed, they will ID, but again, that could be something where you can have someone, a friend of yours, order it, right? And it can be at their house, and then you can just go and pick it up as a youth. So it's not really...
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how, over the next, you know, couple years, how the growing pains of having legislation like this, where it's both active and you know, allowing adults to have it, and very preventative, and, you know, wanting youth to not have it, and trying to bridge that gap is going to be difficult.
Absolutely. And also, I think what's important to consider is that the most underprivileged youth, first of all, don't have access to these educational resources. So they're not seeing the ads. They don't even know that these exist. And they might come from communities where their parents are using. And so they grow up in this environment. And so, you know, we really don't know how much exposure that the most underprivileged youth, you know, have to cannabis as they're growing up. And I think that's something to really consider as well, because I think when we think of cannabis access, we're thinking of, oh, normal, you know, stable parents with stable jobs, they really want to educate their kids and make sure they're safe and they're healthy. But really, some parents, they're not in that situation, and maybe some kids even don't have parents. And so I think that's definitely a fine line to walk, and something that should be, you know, in the back of everyone's minds.
It's also interesting because, you know, you brought up parents that may have been users before, and now it's legal, and so they're not doing anything wrong.
Exactly.
And then so trying to communicate the difference of being, you know, being using as youth and being using as an adult is, you know, it's analogous to alcohol, but it's different still. It's still like it's got, you know, an entirely different social view. And
And we don't even know what the effects of cannabis are, really, because it's been illegal for so long. And so the research really isn't conclusive yet. And so I think it'll just take a lot of time. Maybe the government's probably going to fund a lot of research into the effects of cannabis. And I think that's really something that's going to unfold over the next couple of years.
Sure, there'll be some amendments to this Cannabis Act. A lot of amendments over the next few years.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Going off of that, we've pretty much been talking about this strictly within the perspective of the law. I wonder, is any of your research or any of the information you're going to be disseminating looking more at the health aspect? Because I know that there is a large body of research, especially you've come from psychology, looking at the effects of cannabis kind of on the developing brain, and different researchers are coming out with different kind of ages, stop gaps that they're saying you really shouldn't consume any prior to, you know, this certain age for the sake of your developing brain.
Yeah, I think so. In terms of our project, we're really not touching on any psychological effects or health effects of cannabis, but there is research out there that it does affect the memory, and the younger you start, the longer term effects that it'll have on you. I think it's definitely worth putting out there, but I feel like maybe that's going to be something that people are already kind of jumping on already. But in terms of getting the youth to know what's even legal, that's something that not a lot of people have the expertise to even research. So I think maybe that's the priority for us, definitely.
For sure, makes sense.
How do you think you'll be able to, like you're saying, it's like there are some health effects, but it's really unknown. So how do you, that's probably a barrier to communicating that to kids, where kids
yeah.
are gonna be, or youth are gonna be like, yeah, but how do we even know it's bad for us? Why shouldn't we do it? You know, like
exactly.
like saying, why shouldn't we? What do you have? I know it's still early, but what
yeah.
do you think would be like a, you know, good tactic to try to overcome those concerns?
Well, that's
a good
question.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's almost it's still a drug at the end of the day. I think if you want to frame it in the context of, you know, you don't get any healthier by taking cannabis.
Maybe you could,
yeah.
though.
Maybe
like,
you could.
There's medicinal.
Yes,
medicinal
marijuana,
be,
yes.
Yeah,
but recreationally.
See, I'm playing my
yes,
youth
yes,
devil's advocate
definitely.
Here. You know, they might say that.
It would probably be a very tough argument to win because there really isn't anything out there. But, I mean, besides the medicinal marijuana, we do know that it's not... it's not the most healthiest of things to
yeah.
consume.
Yeah, and speaking anecdotally from my own teenage experience, I think not necessarily punishment, but certainly consequences, as we've discussed, that are now being fairly legally implemented, often are kind of the best behavior shaper.
Yes.
Because, you know, I don't think a 16-year-old is particularly concerned about their long-term health. They're going to live forever.
Yeah. And or just say, well, if you're caught high at work, you're going to get fired.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, I can't buy those headphones that
yeah.
are really
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't get to drive
for.
The car to the party or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's good though the way you guys are doing it in terms of or approaching it as a, not like you shouldn't do this, but like this
yeah.
is the reality of it, and this is what's out there, and
yeah.
here's all the information, and yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate you taking the time. And do you have any parting words you'd like to leave us with?
Thank you very much, though. This is a good opportunity to talk about it. It's very interesting. So,
it's
yeah,
and it's an important legislation and many changes to come.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, good luck with everything in the development. I'm sure it's coming fast and furious. Eh? You guys are just getting on it now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, folks, looks like that is just about all the time we have this week here on Pro Bono Radio.
Yeah, that was really interesting conversation in light of what we were speaking about before with the two streams, preventative for youth, access for adults. It's cool. It's cool what they're going to be doing.
Absolutely, and hopefully we can get them back on the airwaves in April, you know?
Even for an update, if we need to. I'd really like to find out how they go about it. It's a tricky, tricky a thing to have to put that together, to sell that to the youth.
Tricky world to navigate.
It is, always.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, just want to let you know that although us university students here at CJAM are heading into exams, Pro Bono is staying on the airwaves. You can catch us every week, Fridays, noon to 1. And please remember that you can listen to CJAM 99.1 anywhere, anytime, any way by going to www.cjam.ca. You probably don't have to put those W's in, though, if you don't want to. Next week, we will be back with Surratt and Akil, and you're not going to want to miss it.